welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Today's going to be a great show. I have a special guest on who is a tennis podcaster, and he specializes in mental tennis and tennis psychology. Before we get to that, I want to announce a new Essential Tennis contest. I'm going to be giving away all kinds of good prizes, including a brand new tennis racket, a Wilson K Pro Tour, which is the racket that I hit with. And I'm also going to be giving away a brand new Wilson tennis bag and some books and sets of string, etc. All you have to do is go to essentialtennis.com/contest to find out how you can win, or just go to essentialtennis.com and there's a link right there on the front page to take you to the contest page. It has to do with Twitter, so if you're not on Twitter already, this is a great chance for you to get into it. And it's really a lot of fun, and you can win some great prizes by doing some simple things with Twitter and helping out Essential Tennis and gaining some more exposure. So let's get down to the show. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. My guest with me today on the Essential Tennis Podcast is Dr. Patrick Cohn. Dr. Patrick Cohn works with many nationally ranked junior players on their mental game, and he is the host of the Tennis Psychology Podcast, which you guys can find on iTunes and also on his website, which is sportspsychologytennis.com. Dr. Cohn, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ian.
You bet. I'm always excited to have new guests on the podcast. I like talking back and forth with tennis experts, and one of the most common topics that gets talked about here on the Essential Tennis Podcast is the mental game. I really like talking about tennis and where the mental game fits in. I think it's an area that your average level tennis player can really see big strides and big improvements to their game by getting good information about how to strengthen themselves mentally. And so it's really great to have you on the show. I'm looking forward to answering the questions that we have from the listeners of the show. So thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about what you do. I know that you work with nationally ranked juniors. Do you work with any kind of club level or average level tennis players as well? Or do you normally just interact with upper level players?
It's usually, you know, high-level amateur or junior players, nationally ranked junior players, for the most part, that are going to hire me to work on the mental game. And, you know, I want to do a little offshoot of what you talked about earlier, Ian, and I think the mental game can be often neglected by players until they realize that there's a problem or a challenge. And that's unfortunate. You know, it's unfortunate in my work that players feel like they need to be in a slump or they have a real mental game issue, like they've lost all their confidence or they can't take their practice game to matches, for example, before they decide on, well, maybe it's some mental game issues. And I don't think it should be that way. I think players need to educate themselves and learn more and more as their game improves. They need to learn more and more and educate themselves about the mental game. To me, the mental game is like physical training. You know, the more physical training you do to improve your fitness, it's similar with the mental game. The more you do mental training, the better you're going to get with your mental game. And that's how I want players to perceive the mental game. It's not about, you know, solving problems all the time. It's about just getting better.
Yeah, I totally agree with several points that you made there. First of all, yeah, your average level club player, I think, probably considers the mental side of the game something that's not terribly important. And I think you're right. Most players probably wait until there's really a big problem before they start to address it, which is a shame because if you're mentally tough, that can really be a huge advantage out there on the tennis court, since you and your opponent are both out there on, you know, completely on your own. You don't have a coach, you don't have a teammate unless it's doubles, and you've got to kind of coach yourself through the mental challenges and struggles. And so that's why I love having guys like you on the podcast. And as far as building up your strength or your toughness mentally, I've had another mental tennis expert on the show a couple of times who refers to that as mental muscle, which I like that phrase a lot. But you're right, it's like practicing any other part of the game. It's something that listeners of this show and any player can get stronger at. So thanks very much for being here. Let's go ahead and start getting into the questions here. I posted on the forums at EssentialTennis.com and asked for topic suggestions, and the doctor and I are going to be answering several of these questions, maybe three or four. We'll see how many we have time for. Typically, time runs over, and I don't get to as much as I want to. But our first one is going to be a question from Brian Mark, who comes to us from Nebraska. He wrote and asked, how about letting go of double faults and preparing to hit the next serve? It seems that once I hit one, I start to worry about the next one and create self-fulfilling prophecies. Then, nights like tonight, I only hit one in a set and wonder why I don't always do that. Seems like tournaments bring out the worst in my serve. And Brian said he had 23 double faults last weekend in a match, which is definitely makes it tough to win, Brian. And thank you very much for posting that question. And Dr. Cohen, what do you think? What's the best way for players to let go of, you know, kind of a letdown there? Obviously, we don't want a double fault and it's a free point. How do we let go of the disappointment of giving away something like that?
Well, Brian described it as a self-fulfilling prophecy, and not everybody might understand that, Ian. So maybe I should start from there.
Sure.
When a player makes a double fault and they engage in this what I call here I go again thinking, here I go again double faulting the match away, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, you start to think that, oh, I'm going to double fault again, or it's just one of those nights where I'm into that double fault mode. And that's what a self-fulfilling prophecy is. You talk yourself into it, and now you think you're double faulting a lot during the match, and it just, you know, double faults turn into more double faults. That's really what a self-fulfilling prophecy is, okay? So you have to be obviously careful with that, and I can speak to that. But I think what's happening in Brian's case is he's making what's called a generalization, and it's related to this self-fulfilling prophecy. A generalization is, if I start the match early with double faults, I'm going to continue making double faults. In other words, he generalizes based upon past matches that if he starts with making double faults, that it's going to continue for him. And that's a really dangerous mindset, that generalization. So maybe the first step is he's got to be very, very careful about the here we go agains and making those generalizations about the double faults. Okay. With that said, I also think what happens based upon my experience working with players is when they double fault, they get it into their head that they don't want to do it again. Right? Meaning now they're protecting the double fault. They don't want to make more double faults. What am I focused on right now? I'm focused on not double faulting again. That's one of the worst focuses you could have when you're serving, is to get up to the line and think, oh, I don't want to have another double fault. Now you're only focused on the double fault. And that's really a bad mindset to be in. So the goal needs to be, obviously, is to not focus on the negative and not focus on what you don't want to do in that situation. The goal needs to be to focus on the ingredients that's going to help you hit a good serve, okay? What do I mean by that? Well, the ingredients of hitting a good serve has to do with having a plan, right? What type of serve you're going to hit, if you've got different options, if you can hit that kicker serve or hit that flat serve, if you have those different options. What's the target based upon what's working? You're going to go out wide down the line. You know, what's working for you and what is your target? I call that the planning stage. Then you want to go ahead and visualize or feel a good serve or experience yourself hitting a good serve, whatever that means for you. It could be visualizing the trajectory. It could be just feeling solid contact. Whatever works for you, it's very individual for each player. And then you're going to go through the rest of your routine at the line where you're bouncing the ball, you're trying to create a rhythm, and then you're focusing on the target, for example. So that's what I mean. In a general sense, that's what I mean by the ingredients of a good serve, right? You cannot focus on the ingredients of a good serve if you're afraid of double faulting the match away, if you're afraid of missing the service box on your second serve, for example.
Sure.
You have to be very disciplined with your mind and be able to focus on the ingredients that are going to help you hit a serve. As soon as you get defensive and you're protecting the double fault, you're basically done.
I really like the process that you laid out and the ingredients that you gave us there, you know, kind of a recipe for success. And what I like so much about it, Patrick, is that you're giving us so many positive things that should be focused on the target, the process, feeling, you know, or thinking about hitting, making good contact, going through that whole planning phase, and every part of it was a positive thought or a positive emotion was attached to it, as opposed to what Brian is saying, that, you know, as you said, the oh here we go again type thing, which is clearly negative. And once once that prophecy is fulfilled once, obviously the tendency is going to be to kind of go in that downward spiral and just continue to repeat that again and again. And emotionally, you know, the person gets more and more negative. But what I love about what you're talking about is these are all positive thoughts, all positive emotions, and top level athletes are continuously optimistic, and there's never even a thought in their mind. Well, I mean, there is sometimes, but that the vast majority of their thoughts are, oh, I'm going to make this shot. I'm going to hit my target. I'm going to hit a good shot. And it's just, you know, the inner dialogue is so positive and intense. And so what I'm hearing you say is Brian has got to reverse his inner dialogue. It's got to be more positive, more optimistic, and hopefully the results will follow. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. There's always two sides of the coin, as you talked about. You know, there's the players that go out there and try to avoid failure, avoid missing shots, avoid missing the easy volley or the routine shot, avoid the double fault, which, you know, is very easy to get sucked into, as opposed to there's the players that strive for success and are always focused on what they want to do to execute that shot. And that's where you need to be throughout the match. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about the service, it's any shot that you're hitting. You could certainly play that way, but it's not going to be a way to play your best tennis if you're focused on what not to do and avoiding errors.
Yep, that's the classic playing not to lose instead of playing to win. And the best athletes and competitors in the world are constantly playing to win. They're playing towards their best shots, and that's usually what happens for them, as opposed to the opposite. Well, good stuff. Anything else on that topic, Patrick, before we move on to our next question?
Well, certainly you have to have confidence in your ability to hit the serve. If you can, you know, in practice, if you can, minimize those double faults, obviously, and if you can increase your first serve percentage, that's going to go a long way too, because then you don't have some of the challenges with worrying about having to get that second serve in, because you're getting, you know, you have a better first serve percentage. So for Brian, a good goal might be to go out there and focus on a strong first serve percentage rather than minimizing, you know, doubles.
Sure. All right, good stuff. Well, let's go on to our next question, and that is going to be from BB, who lives in North Carolina. She wrote and said, I've been fascinated with crowd mentality. By this, I mean how a person plays when a crowd is watching. The pros usually use this to their advantage, playing to the crowd for show, while rec players have a tendency to break down in front of crowds. It may be good to discuss the difference in their mentality towards crowds and how a player can change their mentality if a crowd emerges at a match. What do you think, Dr. Cohn?
Yeah, it's very intuitive question here, because there is definitely, from a professional standpoint, there's the home, what I call the home court advantage, where they'll use that crowd to their advantage to give them intensity, to give them adrenaline, to help them focus even better. I think the best players in the world out there, you know, are able to go deeper into their bubble, deeper into their cocoon when they have people there that are there cheering them on. You know, it seems counterintuitive to think that way, that you have more people there watching you that are for you, and the player can go deeper into the zone. But I think that's what the great players are doing. Now, on the other hand, for amateurs, I think their focus is more on a concept that I call social approval. All right. Now, that's a real broad concept in my work, but basically it says that the player has concerns about what other people think. So in Bibi's case, it's not the crowd mentality. It's about the player's mentality about the crowd. So, we can go back about striving, you know, worrying about fear of failure and striving to avoid failure. It can be similar from this perspective. You can look at it two sides of the coin here as well. The player that has this fear of embarrassing him or herself is not going to play well when there's bigger crowds, because that means there's more at stake for that player. There's more at stake because there's more chance for embarrassment if the player doesn't play well. On the other end of the coin, some players want badly to look good. They want respect. This all falls under the category of social approval. They want to be liked. They want others to see them as good players. So now that player, although focusing on something that's more, you could say, positive, feels a pressure or feels a need to, I don't want to say show off, I mean, that's pretty strong, but to show off that person's talents and however they do that. You know, it could mean winning, or it could mean just hitting great shots. So, but in either case, if your focus is on what the crowd may be thinking, or what persons in the crowd may be thinking about your game, then you're not completely focused on your tennis. You're either worried about embarrassing yourself, or you're concerned that you're showing off your talents in a positive light. And in either case, it's not going to help you focus on the match, because it becomes pressure and it becomes expectation. So I think the root here, Ian, for me, is players that focus too much on what others think about their game, which we call social approval in my work.
Okay. That's really interesting, because we're talking about things now, the social approval that you're talking about. I mean, we're getting into some pretty deep psychological, you know, responses and desires and wants. It's kind of interesting to me how those things actually get connected so deeply to a sport like tennis. I've got a kind of a follow-up question for you. I'm just curious what your response would be to this. So we're talking about the amateur player and how they become concerned with what the other spectators are thinking of them. You know, are they going to think I'm a good player or a bad player? You know, wanting to maybe show off, like you said, or maybe being nervous. How is it then that professional players oftentimes can feed off of that, feed off of the crowd, and actually raise their level? What's the mental or emotional difference between a player who can actually take a crowd setting and elevate their game, and somebody who typically kind of chokes in a situation like that?
Well, they don't have that need or that concern, I think, of that social approval. I think they've learned that, hey, you know what, the only thing that matters is me and my opponent in the court. So part of their mentality isn't focused on, you know, what the crowd is thinking. Like, for example, you know, I worked with a junior player that said 40% of her focus is on what her parents and other parents are thinking about her game. Okay.
Sure.
That's just, you know, that's not going to cut it. All right. At the professional level, like I said, they don't have this huge concern or this need for and worry about what other people are thinking. They're only consumed with what's going on in the court. Now, when they have that home court advantage or when there's a lot of people watching, like I said earlier, Ian, I think it drives them further into the zone. It drives them further into what they need to focus on to perform their best.
Okay.
Because they know in order for them to perform their best, they need to focus on a specific set of performance cues. You know, the performance cues that are going to help them execute good shots. So to me, when they have a home court advantage or when there's a lot of people watching them, like, you know, center court at Wimbledon, for example, they're able to narrow their focus even more on what's important to execute good shots. And that's really, I think, what separates your good amateurs from your top level professionals.
Okay. Great stuff. Thanks for answering that question. Let's move on to our third one. And I'd like to try to get to two more, but we'll see. We may run out of time. Our next question comes from Sally in Washington State. She wrote and said, "A subject I'd love to hear discussed is the inner drive to win, the importance of knowing someone believes in you, the power of your inner will and confidence, and having that attitude in check before you step out onto the courts. Can you talk a little bit about that, kind of the importance of kind of believing in yourself and having confidence in yourself that you can perform well going onto the competitive court?"
Oh, it's critical. I mean, it's probably the number one thing that your listeners have to harness is that inner confidence, that inner belief. The biggest mistake that I see players making is they wait until they get into the match to decide how confident they're going to be. We call that leaving confidence up to chance. In other words, if they have a poor warm-up prior to the match, then they'll struggle with confidence early in the match. Or if they drop a couple of games early in the match, then they'll struggle with confidence because they're waiting for their game to arrive before they can feel confident.
Sure.
And that's the mistake, I think. So from my perspective, athletes in general need to be more proactive with their confidence, need to take responsibility instead of be reactive. Being reactive means, oh, my shots didn't feel great in warm-up, so I guess I'm not going to play great today. That's reactive. I prefer my students to be proactive in that they try to harness and take confidence into the first, point of the first set, of the first game. That's critical, I think, to give yourself a better chance of playing better early on. Then momentum, you can get momentum from that, which is another concept in and of itself, but it's related to confidence. If I can get momentum, then I've got a lot of confidence going on. Because as you know, and we could talk about that in another show, that's a huge topic, I think, from a mental game perspective, is how to harness the momentum, or how to keep the momentum, or how to get the momentum if you don't have it. But being proactive with your confidence means that you're going to remember that confidence isn't about the last shot you hit, or isn't about that 10-minute warm-up you had before the match. Confidence is a long-term project. If you've been playing and practicing for 6 years, that's how long you've been working on your confidence for. And you always have to remember that confidence needs to be something that's long-term and enduring and not be on the confidence roller coaster depending upon, you know, your perception of the last shot or the last game of the match. That's not true confidence. If you're losing confidence early in the match very quickly, then there's a good indication that you don't have that true confidence that you need.
Good stuff. And tell me if I'm wrong here, but I would have to assume then that this is very closely tied to the first question we talked about, where Brian was having problems double faulting and having pessimistic thoughts or negative attitude and self-fulfilling prophecy type thing. I would have to assume then, Dr. Cohn, that building that long-term confidence is probably very closely tied in with just having positive thoughts and you know, picking your target and having the process or the ingredients you were talking about. How closely tied in are those two concepts?
Yeah, I would say they're very closely tied in because when Brian gets in the match, in the back of his mind, he's going, you know, who's going to show up today?
Yeah.
Server number one or server number two.
Right.
And that's the start of the doubting process. You're opening up the door for the doubt at that point. And now he's not sure. Confidence-wise, he's not sure who's going to show up for the match. You know, server one or server number two. And that makes it difficult for him to have full confidence in the match. So I do believe, you know, being more proactive with his confidence, not assuming that he's going to serve great, but just having confidence in his serve prior to the match is going to go a long way.
Nice. Good stuff. Well, thanks for tying those two things together. And I want to get to one more question real quickly before we wrap things up. And I want to get to this because it's a question that's near and dear to my own heart when it comes to competition in general, not even just in tennis. And Sally and Brian both touched on this briefly. Brian said, a few missed shots and my dad is down on himself badly, especially missed overheads. Any suggestions for correcting that? He's a perfectionist, which makes missed shots especially bothersome to him. And Sally said, I'm still fascinated with the pressure that comes along in real match situations. Does anyone ever feel pressure to be really perfect? What can you talk just for a couple of minutes, Dr. Cohn, about maybe those of us who are kind of perfectionists by nature, how can we deal with missing shots or missing easy shots? How can we keep from getting down on ourselves and angry and kind of falling into a downward emotional spiral?
Well, if we had about 2 hours, I could cover this topic thoroughly because this is a huge one in my work. I actually created a program called the Parents' Top Dilemma, which was about perfectionism in youth sports and kids in sports because it's so rampant. It's even worse when you look at sports like when you go to skating or gymnastics or dance where people are judged on their performance. It gets even worse in those type of sports. Mm-hmm. But it is very relevant in tennis as well. The quick answer to that is, I mean, there's so much involved with perfectionism. The quick answer is, well, there's two answers. One is the expectations that perfectionists have.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectionists go into the match thinking that they can't miss shots or they can't miss hit shots, that they can't double fault, you know, so they have very strict expectations about how they should perform. They pretty much think that they look back on their peak performance or their best performance in practice, and they think they should perform that way every single time. So when they don't perform up those expectations, then they lose it. They lose confidence, and obviously they lose emotional control and get angry and frustrated. So the quick answer is you have to manage your expectations going in. The other quick answer is you have to be much more accepting of yourself in general when you do make mistakes, which ties into what I said about expectations. Being accepting means I'm not perfect. I'm a human. I'm going to make mistakes. It's not going to help me to dwell on those mistakes or beat myself up about those mistakes, but it will help me to learn and to get better as a player. And know that mistakes will help me grow. So it's very critical for them to let go of the mistake, be more accepting, and take more of a learning approach and a growth approach from their mistakes so they can get better rather than just, you know, emotionally frustrated with what they're doing.
Yeah, it can, and speaking from experience, it can be very difficult to actually accept that something positive can actually come from missing or losing or something that, you know, typically has a negative connotation to it in general. And even more so with somebody who has kind of a perfectionistic nature. And I've actually written a blog about that, about accepting your losses or your misses and learning from it. And that can be really hard to do. It's difficult for people like myself to be positive when negative things happen on the courts. But you know what? I guess it's probably me saying that it's negative to miss or negative to lose. I bet that's probably just a product of kind of my nature right there to begin with, isn't it? Just the very fact that I'm saying it's a bad thing to miss. I mean, that's just part of the game, isn't it?
It is, and you have to look at it from a learning perspective. As a matter of fact, I devoted two sessions, you know, in my audio program to that. One session on letting go of errors, and another session on how to deal with the perfectionism as well. As you know, Ian, I produced a program just for tennis players called Tennis Confidence, Mental Toughness for Tournament Players. Those two things are so important about managing the perfectionism and learning how to stay composed after errors. If you don't have those elements, it's very difficult to play your best.
I agree. Yeah, I know how that goes. Well, let's wrap things up. And Dr. Cohn, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And thank you very much for your time and for the effort that you put into answering the questions here today. And everybody listening, I really encourage you to go check out Dr. Cohn's podcast. Again, it's the Tennis Psychology Podcast. Go subscribe to it on iTunes and check out his website at sportspsychologytennis.com. Patrick, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to hearing more of your shows.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Ian.
All right. Thank you very much for joining me on today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 76. Make sure to head on over to EssentialTennis.com and check out the Twitter contest. There's going to be 5 winners in that contest. So get in there, start retweeting, and you could win a new racket or a new bag or some other stuff as well, strains and books, etc. So go check it out. And until next time, take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.